If you were Larry Scott, what would you do to help close the gap between the Pac-12 and the SEC?
See if Marcus Mariota can come back or Matt Leinart in his prime. I don't think that the financial gap is real. There's no mm-hmm. question about that. And there's not an easy answer for that. Larry Scott's basically putting all his eggs in the new TV deal that'll come up in a few years.
Well, Stuart, thanks for joining us. You're the editor-in-chief for the College Football at The Athletic and the host of the Audible podcast. We thank you for joining us. Stuart, I have to start here. On July 11th in 2012, you classify the 66 Power 5 schools as either kings, barons, knights, or peasants. Now, I found that you had Washington State University, where I'm an alumni, as both a knight and a peasant. So which is it?
I had them in both in 2012.
You had them in both.
The funny thing is there was a 2017 edition of that. And my guess is I unfortunately had them in the peasants because they had been bad for a long time at that point. That was right before Leach finally got it going. But before that, like 2012 would have been what, Paul Wolf era?
Yeah. And I would agree with you. We were peasants at that point.
So, and it had been that way for about 10 years. So they were probably peasants.
I guess we'll live with that. We'll close on something else. College football, we'll stick with that. Stuart, we're sure you've heard the word speculation a lot over the last 2 months. Based on what you've heard, as of today, probably the last hour, will we see a full season of games?
I feel very confident right now, more so than at any time, that everybody is going to play the season and start on time. And barring the course of the virus taking in a very unfortunate direction, if things remain on the course that we are as a country, you know, you're already seeing schools bring players back in the next couple of weeks to start workouts. Everybody's planning to start on time. And what happens from there will be, as Anthony Fauci says, right? The virus will determine that, not us. It's just, can you get through a season without huge outbreaks that would cause a team to have to shut it back down? I don't think any of us know. This is uncharted territory. But the good news is we're not hearing what we were hearing a month or more ago when everything started shutting down and really things felt pretty dire. And there was a lot of talk of, was the season going to get delayed? Are they going to have to move it to January? I don't think anybody's in that mindset anymore.
Stuart, you wrote recently or did an anonymous survey with some college football players about their likeliness of coming back. A lot of the questions were around, what about if fans were there? Would mm-hmm. they play? Would they not want to play? Can we see a future of which there's athletes only on campus?
We've seen a reversal on that from in mid-April, I believe. The commissioners met with the vice president, Mike Pence, and the message they gave to him was, if we're not able to have students on campus, then we're not going to have college football games because the college football players are students. And at some point, they backed off of that, probably realizing that they didn't want to box themselves in like that. And I also just think that it seems like no matter how you announce it, no matter how you word your statement, I think most universities are heading toward the same or very similar models of, there will be students, at least some students back on campus, but there will still be a lot of online classes. So I think that if that's the case, as long as there are some students back, as long as the university as a whole feels that they can do it safely, that yeah, they'll play football games, even if that means that the whole 30, 40,000 students aren't necessarily all back.
And Stuart, you've also written about the impact of budget cuts across other athletic programs due to COVID. And what's essential in football, college football, and not essential?
Conferences, especially the Power Five, have had it so good for so long because the money just kept going up and up and up with no interruption, that I think they got used to spending money that they came to consider essential that we now realize was not essential. And so, I mean, teams are effectively recruiting right now without the coaches going on the road or without the players coming to visit. Obviously, in an ideal world, you would have some of that back. Do you necessarily need to spend all that money on private planes for an assistant coach to touchdown in Houston for 15 minutes and then get back on the plane and go visit the next kid. That's not essential. And there's a lot of other things like that, that are basically luxuries that, because they had the money, they spent the money. And I think that this has been a wake up call for everybody that you might want to, you know, it's great that the Big Ten gets $50 million per team from their TV deal. You might want to put some of that away for a rainy day fund, because this is exposing the fact that schools don't save any money. They spend it as quickly as it comes in.
Stuart, you recently interviewed Bubba Cunningham. The AD, name, image, and likeliness, NIL as it is, came out of California. Jay Billis wants free market. I'd be interested to get your stance.
Well, from a big picture perspective, I just think it's the right thing to do. I don't think you can morally anymore say that college has to stay completely amateur, and that if a kid makes even $1,000 from his name, image, and likeness, that he should be ineligible. That's just not compatible with the reality of college sports in 2020. It's a big, big, big business. If a offensive coordinator can make $2 million, certainly you shouldn't be keeping college athletes from making money off their own name, image, and likeness. That being said, obviously there's going to be consequences that either people are predicting or we can't even think of right now that will affect things like recruiting. And some of them, I would not be thrilled if recruiting becomes like a bidding war between boosters who use NIL as a front to basically hand cash over to kids. But I still think the benefits outweigh the risks, and it's still a worthy thing to do, even though there are probably going to be things that come up that we can't even anticipate now that they're going to have to address as a result of it.
They've talked about a potential clearinghouse, I believe, in order for someone to get paid or some sort of oversight potentially. My question to you is, why couldn't we hold a student athlete or an athlete to standards academically?
There was a lot of the document that they put out, that the NCAA put out in last month or earlier this month, had a lot of vague language about guardrails. They kept using that word guardrails. And they haven't specifically said what they have in mind, but I do think that one of them could be tying it to academic performance or having basic minimums you have to meet. That being said, that also feels like the next lawsuit to happen, right? I mean, we've gotten to this point. We got to this point because of litigation, where the NCAA got taken to court, first by Ed O'Bannon and then by others. And while it didn't result in huge changes, certainly, they did lose the cases. They were ruled to be in violation of antitrust. And so as soon as you say, okay, we're now allowing athletes to make money off their name, image, and likeness, but we're going to put X, Y, and Z restriction on it, that to me seems like, I'm not a lawyer, but seems like the next lawsuit waiting to happen. And then, you know, you're going right back down that road again.
On your National Recruiting Update podcast about a week or so ago, you guys mentioned that Reggie Bush, potentially in his heyday, could have made him anywhere between 4 to 6 million. What do you think an athlete like Keaton Slovis would make for USC coming into a year where NIL was in place?
Well, I think Reggie Bush, and that was my colleague and co-host Bruce Feldman who wrote that article, would be on he's the outlier. He was playing for USC at a time when when LA had no pro football and USC was the toast of the town in LA. And I mean, you guys know, like that dynasty was the thing in LA at that time. So I think he would have cashed in much more so than Keaton Slovis would today. I mean, Keaton Slovis is a star, a college football star, but he's not, I don't think you would put him in the realm of a celebrity. Like Liner and Bush and Pete Carroll certainly were celebrities at that time in LA. You know, I think Tua would be considered, last year would have been considered a celebrity. Joe Burrow, once he got rolling, reached that status. Those are guys who could have made considerable money. I think Keaton Slovis or Justin Fields would make money off this, no question. But I would caution people against assuming they're going to make millions and millions of dollars. For one thing, you know, college players are only in college for a limited amount of time. Nobody had even heard of Keaton Slovis this time last year, right? He came out of nowhere. It takes a while to build up that name recognition. And then they're off to the NFL. So, you know, I'll be fascinated to see how it all plays out. Will agents be NFL agents be recruiting kids out of high school in the hopes that break big, and then when they go to the NFL, they'll sign with them. We don't know. We'll see. Certainly being the starting quarterback of a major team like that, he'll be one of the people that would be in a good position to cash in. I just don't think it'd be millions of dollars.
If we take a step back and look at some of his peers, you've got, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, some of the top teams this year early on, it's Bama, it's Clemson, it's Ohio State. Some people have Penn State or even Oklahoma in there. Who would you say is the favorite going into the year?
I mean, college football has become the Clemson Alabama show. It's like, which year is it? Who is on top this year, right? Now, LSU obviously broke that last year, but they're kind of going to have to start over. That was a once-in-a-generation team that they then lost almost all of the key players from. Yeah, I think Clemson will start out number one, and they should. Trevor Lawrence, not just Trevor Lawrence, but Travis Etienne surprised a lot of people by coming back. Justin Ross, their star receiver, still there. And they're always very good on defense. But I also kind of feel like Alabama is going to be on a revenge tour. Their 10-2 or 11-2 season last year was a disappointment by Alabama standards. And they're going to be very, very good. So I kind of consider them like 1A and 1B.
At WST Podcast, we have a slight West Coast bias. Which team from the Pac-12, in your opinion, has the best chance to sneak in and get into a BCS playoff game?
I mean, you got to go with Oregon coming off the season that they just had. And obviously question at quarterback will determine whether they can be that kind of team or not. But overall, as a program, the talent level they have now under Mario Cristobal, you know, they are on the brink, I think, of being that kind of team that can go to the contend regularly for playoffs. The other one, though, is USC. And some people don't want to hear that or don't believe it. How could the Clay Helton-coached USC Trojans be considered a playoff contender? But look at not just Slovis coming back, but all those great receivers they have coming back. Look at the fact that they had so many injuries on defense last year, but they still had some key players emerge on that side of the ball. They just got hurt. And I think Clay Helton really upgraded his staff this year. So, you know, there's obviously going to be skepticism about them until they prove otherwise. But from a personnel standpoint, I think Oregon's the only team I would put ahead of them. And I'm not even sure that it's that big a gap.
I would agree. And Ben and I have gone back and forth trying to support the Pac-12, but the gap between the Pac-12 and the SEC seems to be growing in terms of athletes selected in the first round, the second round, or even overall. And then if you look at just the revenue that's distributed and trickled down to the schools, if you were Larry Scott, what would you do to help close the gap between the Pac-12 and the SEC?
See if Marcus Mariota can come back or Matt Leinart in his prime. I don't think that the financial gap is real. There's no mm-hmm. question about that. And there's not an easy answer for that. Larry Scott's basically putting all his eggs in the new TV deal that'll come up in a few years. And I do think though, because they've been the least recent to make a new TV deal, that's why they're so far behind. When they get their new TV deal, it'll bring them more in line with the other Power Five conferences. But of course, then the Big Ten will get their new deal and lap it, and the SEC will lap it. But at least it'll be better than what they have now. I don't think that from the on-field standpoint, I mean, the SEC has the premier talent. Nobody could question that. The recruiting rankings show it, and the NFL draft numbers certainly show it. But this, it's like we have a very short memories in college football. Pac-12 hasn't had a national title contender type team in a few years, but they did when Oregon had it rolling, and they certainly did when USC had it rolling under Pete Carroll. And there's no reason why somebody else can't emerge as that program going forward. I think the one area where the Pac-12 lags behind is they don't tend to produce the elite defensive line. Like when you look at where elite defensive line, like NFL defensive linemen come from, they come overwhelmingly from the South. They don't come from California necessarily. But where the Pac-12 has had the advantage over the years is they produce the best quarterbacks that the West Coast does. And as long as that's the case, like I said, Mariota and Andrew Luck, like these are the guys who you may not have 1 through 85, the talent that Alabama or LSU has, but if you have that transcendent quarterback, it can make a huge difference.
So you mentioned quarterback, which with the West Coast offense, spread offense, we love to throw out West. You know, everyone knows about Slovis and Jaden Daniels from Arizona State. Are there any quarterbacks from the Pac-12 that are on your radar and you expect them to break out a little bit this year?
There were a couple guys last year that came on, flew under the radar a little bit, but could take that next step this year. One's Chase Garbers at Cal. It was night and day. When he was healthy, Cal had a good functioning offense. And when he got hurt in the middle of the season and was out for 4 or 5 games, Cal regressed considerably. He looked really good in the bowl game, particularly against Illinois. I think if he takes the next step forward, he could emerge as one of those guys. Same thing also staying in the Bay Area. Davis Mills at Stanford was a 5-star recruit coming out of high school who got thrown into the fire earlier than expected last year when KJ Costello got hurt and had his moments, but also had some rough moments. I think that's to be expected. He's got the talent. I mean, he could be a big time quarterback if Stanford can protect him, which the last couple of years their offensive line has really struggled.
Stuart, okay. I think you're a data guy. You did the analysis about the 4 and 5 stars being drafted in the NFL. COVID's impacted recruiting quite a bit. And of late, I think at least 5 out of the 10 top 10 recruits in California have left the Pac-12. Could we see a reversal in that and just players staying home more and USC and UCLA and Stanford and the like that contribute to the rise of the Pac-10? And Kyle said it best, maybe Larry Scott invented COVID for this.
In poor taste to think of it this way, but it may be the best thing that could have happened to them because the trend had become in the last couple of years, we've been seeing more and more of the top California kids go to Clemson or Alabama or LSU. And understandably so, they want to go where they can play for the national championship. And that hasn't been the case out here recently. And they want to go into the NFL. And those schools have certainly done a great job of doing that. But I think it was pretty significant when Corey Foreman, the number one player in the country for this class coming up, and is in California, and he had been committed to Clemson and continuing a recent, you know, Clemson now had 2 or 3 years in a row where they got a big time kid from California. And he decommitted, and now he's expected to stay closer to home and commit to USC. And I think that that is probably a sign of things to come. Could you blame parents right now? And we have no answers yet on COVID. Would you really want your kid to go out 3,000 miles away to college right now? I don't think so. Now you still need USC to have something to offer. And I think kids have been scared away recently because of the instability there. UCLA, Chip Kelly needs to get it going. Kids aren't going to go there unless he shows that he can win there. But certainly that trend, I think, we'll see come signing day this year. You may see a lot more kids stay closer to home than usual.
That's what I was hoping you'd say, Stuart. We need the Pac-12 resurgent. The future of the Pac-12 football in one sentence.
The future of Pac-12 football is that there are better days ahead, but there's still going to be, it could still leave a lot of fans frustrated.
The Pac-12 kicked around breakfast starts. What are your thoughts on breakfast starts for the Pac-12?
I think it would be fun to do it once or twice a year across the whole conference. It'd be very inconvenient for the fans. There's no question about that, but you saw last year, how I wasn't supposed to keep this to one sentence, was I?
No.
you saw last year how quickly Fox's big noon kickoff became a staple viewing, and it was a lot of big Ohio State games during that window. I think it would benefit the Pac-12 tremendously if they could get one of their big games in that slot instead of it being at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. But it would, there's no question, be inconvenient for the fans. So I don't think you can ask people to do that every week. But once a year, twice a year, I think that would be pretty cool.
Stuart, you're a Northwestern grad. Complete this sentence. The Wildcats are to the Big Ten as blank are to the Pac-12.
I think they're probably closest to Oregon State, a team that rises up and surprises you every so often, but will always be operating from a disadvantage relative to their rivals.
Stuart, in your opinion, who's the best NFL prospect this coming year in the Pac-12?
See, Kayvon Thibodeau is not eligible yet. So this is a tough one to answer off the top of my head. Well, it might be Stanford's offensive lineman, Walker Little, because a lot of people thought he could be a top 10 pick going into last season, and then he tore his ACL in the season opener. So unless he forgot how to play offensive tackle during his time away, I mean, I would think he's still in contention for that.
Stuart, you have a picture of Wisconsin versus Oregon Rose Bowl game as your background in Twitter. Do you have a secret?
Not the most recent one.
It's the dated one.
Yeah.
Do you have a secret affinity for the Ducks or just love the granddaddy of them all?
It's about the granddaddy of them all. That is my favorite event in sports to cover. And unfortunately, so in the old BCS arrangement, I would cover it every year on New Year's Day. And then the national championship was a week later. Then when they go to this new model, and you got to go where the playoff games are. So the Rose Bowl was only one of those once every 3 years. And it's definitely lost a little bit of its luster because of that. But that scene when the sun sets in the third quarter and the Purple Mountain, I mean, it's just, there's nothing better. And so that's really what that picture is attributed to.
So you're in the Bay Area, and that's where we have the big game. I'm originally from the Bay Area. So this year, Stanford goes to Cal. Based on what you know today, who's going to win the big game this year?
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, I think Cal has the better football team. So, I mean, Cal's a team that I see winning. If they stay healthy and play as expected, they could win 9 or 10 games this year. Stanford, to me, has more of a 7-5 kind of ceiling. So upsets can happen, but as of this moment, I would think Cal would be favored in that game.
All right, Stuart, I think this is our last question for you. So I'm going to revisit the program pecking order, as you called it, I think, in that article. The Cougs were still listed as peasants. The Cougs are also averaging 9 wins a season since 2007. 3 bowl games.
2007?
17, excuse 17. Me. So I'm positioning myself for the next release, Stuart, of the pecking order here. One phenomenal visit from game day. You saw the enthusiasm there. A quarterback in Gardner Minshew, who created Minshew Media, but is also going to lead the Jags to the playoffs this year. Could we possibly jump our way all the way to Barron's this next release? I want to go directly from peasants to Barron's.
I mean, so if people aren't familiar with that article, it's prestige rankings. It's not so much tied to on the field. And I just don't know that in 5 years' time, Washington State's going to be thrown in the same category as Georgia and Auburn and programs like that. But they could certainly move up to the one in between because this is assuming Nick Rolovich can continue what Leach has built there. But this has certainly been a bit of a golden era for them. And I think they've started to enjoy more of the profile that they had back when they were going to Rose Bowls in 97 and 03.
Stuart, I guess one last question. You got one college football game you can watch all season. You only get to watch one. What one do you have circled on the schedule that you say I have to see this game?
For this coming season, the one I think is that game is Clemson going to Notre Dame. First of all, it'll probably be the first game all year that Clemson would have any chance of losing. It's South Bend. It's at night. It's one of those intersectional games that just doesn't happen very often, although they did play about 5 years ago. So, and it's in November. So instead of, you know, usually that cool non-conference games in week 1 or week 2, this one will be when the playoff rankings are already coming out. And I think Notre Dame will be in the mix. You know, it's hard. Some years when you think they're going to be good, they're not, and vice versa. But that could be a really big game.
That'll be an exciting one to watch. Stuart, you want to tell our fans where they can listen to your podcast and read about your content online?
Our podcast is called The Audible with Stu and Bruce, and they can get that wherever they listen to this podcast or podcasts in general. And, you know, The Athletic, if you haven't checked us out, what are you waiting for? I think we truly believe we've created the premier sports site for sports content, and you can try it for free. Just go on The Athletic, click on any article, and it'll take you to that free trial.
All right. Well, thanks for joining the show. Ben, got any more questions for him?
No, Stuart, I'll let you go. Appreciate it. We got 30 minutes with you. We appreciate the time. Keep keep releasing great podcasts. You've been great. I'll throw some questions in your mailbag at some point, very cougar slanted, and I'll be sure to remind you that we're on our way to Barron's program. So
check in with me again before the 2022 edition of that.
Yeah, I will. I already put a reminder in my calendar.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Right,
Stuart. Thanks, Stuart. Have a good one. Take care.
Seattle, Portland, LA, San Fran, San Diego, Scottsdale, Phoenix. This is Kay Wynn.
And Big Ben.
And we are Western Standard Time. WSD Podcast. We're everywhere online. Podbeam, iTunes, Apple Podcasts. What do we talk about, Ben?
We got all sports, NBA, NFL, MLB, Pac-12, WCC. If it's on the West Coast, we got you covered.
You know what else we got you covered? A little lifestyle, a little fun, a little banter to lighten up your day. There are 5-minute life guides.
So whether you live in Seattle, Kansas City, Frisco, Texas, Boston, Worcester, Florida, and you love West Coast sports, make sure you follow us, download us. New episode every Friday.
And we're out.
Boom.
Boom.